recorded live.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Talking Twilight Zone. And my name is Lynn, and we are just about ready to get started.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everybody, and today we are reviewing Nightmare as a Child. But before we do, let me turn this over to our dear friend Robert for his opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Month of November, hot chocolate, and a small cameo of a child's face, imperfect only in its solemnity. And these are the improbable ingredients to a human emotion. An emotion, say, like fear. But in a moment, this woman, Helen Foley, will realize fear. She will understand what are the properties of terror. A little girl will lead her by the hand and walk with her into a nightmare.
Back to you, Lynn.
Okay, thanks, Robert. I appreciate that. And, yes, we are reviewing Nightmare as a Child. And it starts out with a lovely woman named Helen Foley, who is a school teacher and played very well by actress Janice Rule. She comes home one day to find a little blonde girl sitting on the steps in the hallway outside of her apartment. Helen starts to talk to her and realizes that the kid speaks like an adult. Helen invites her into her apartment and makes hot chocolate. The little girl starts to tell Helen that, you know, there are some very personal things that she knows about Helen's life. She even tells Helen that she knows how much she doesn't like marshmallows in her hot chocolate and says she doesn't like them either. Now, Helen's surprised, but pretty much brushes it off until the kid tells her that she knows everything about her, including how Helen got a burn on her arm. She tells Helen that her name is Markie, but that still doesn't ring a bell with Helen. And she tells Markie that she's forgotten much about her childhood. Helen starts becoming annoyed at the child's precociousness and stone-faced conversation, especially when she brings up a man that Helen saw today and thought she might have recognized. Then someone knocks on Helen's door, and Markie runs out the apartment, saying that she'll return later, but she lets Helen know that it's the man that she saw. Helen opens the door, and a man who introduces himself as Peter Selden is there. He says he saw her that day and remembered her, so he decided to pay her a visit. Helen says she doesn't remember him, so he jogs her memory. Suddenly, Markie is heard in the background singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, but Peter doesn't hear it. Only Helen does. In the meantime, Peter tells Helen that he once worked for her now-deceased mother and handled her books, or accounting work. Peter then shows her a childhood photo of herself, and the photo is of Markie. Peter tells her that it's her as a child and also reminds her that her nickname as a child was Markie. Suddenly, Helen lays down and remembers the night of her mother's murder and remembers that Peter is the one who killed her. Finally, Helen, completely distraught, runs into the hallway where Markie is sitting again, and she tells Helen that she is her as a child. She then sees the burn mark on Markie's arm and knows that it's true. Peter confesses to the murder and says that he has followed Helen through the years, knowing that one day her memory would return, and now he must do away with Helen as well. Helen runs, and when Peter chases after her, she pushes him down the stairs to his death. And once a doctor and policeman come onto the scene, they are heard saying how lucky Helen was that she wasn't murdered. Well, that didn't seem to me like much of an investigation, though. Markie wasn't real, but she sure saved Helen's life. Also, at the end, Helen hears the Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star song being sung again, but when Helen opens the door, it's a different little girl, just another apartment tenant. Markie's gone. However, my other problems with this episode, besides the lack of investigation by the police of a dead man, is that they mention how beautiful this kid is. And as far as I'm concerned, she was not beautiful at all. In fact, she was a dumb-looking kid. So sue me. The kid was not beautiful. She was as precocious. She was. I mean, damn, she was dumb looking. And, she was as precocious and annoying as hell. If a kid was sitting in my home talking to me as arrogantly as this kid was talking to Helen, I'd throw her out pretty quickly. Next, Janice Rule is fine in the role, but really, come on. She doesn't recognize herself. I'm 51 years old and know what I looked like as a child. Then why does this guy come back to kill her when she hasn't said a word about her mother's death or pinpointed him in all this time? I mean, is this episode for real? The guy comes back after she's a grown woman, like she's going to turn in a guy she doesn't even remember. So he jars her memory. Yeah, that makes sense. You've been gone for years, so now come back and jar the girl's memory. Are you serious? Tell me why. That's what I want to know. It had way too many flaws and ridiculous concepts, so I'm afraid I have to give this one a lousy rating. But anyway, okay, I'm going to turn this over to Ken right now for his viewpoints. Go ahead, Ken.
I agree with you, Lynn. I'm going to give a lousy rating also. But I will have to compliment Rod Serling and the executive producers for finally listening to me and other people who watch The Twilight Zone. Because if you notice in the season one, a majority of the stories are male-dominated.
Yes.
This is episode 28. And
29.
That's right. I'm looking at our book right now. Yeah. You're right. Episode 29. Hey, I want to give a plug for the book. Volume 1 is in print. You can get it at Amazon. Just click The Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed, Volume 1. And you can buy our outstanding book. But like I said, this is episode 29, and we've only had three or four other stories where the women dominate the story. So, I mean, the percentages are awful. But in this story, it's the main focus is Helen Foley, and Janice Rule plays the part pretty good. And I like Janice Rule. In fact, if you guys don't know it already, I have a Twilight Zone Hall of Fame for women. And I keep adding people as they come up. And if you don't know the other ones I've added in season one, episode 13, The Four of Us Are Dying, we had Beverly Garland. She had a small part, but she was gorgeous, so I had to add her.
And I know Agnes Moorehead is in there, right?
Well, that comes later, and it's not just beauty. You know, Lynn, it's not just beauty, but it's also the performance. But beauty plays a huge part also.
I agree.
So the other inductions I've had in my Hall of Fame for women for The Twilight Zone, episode 16, The Hitchhiker, we had Inger Stevens. And then episode 21, Mirror Image, I put Vera Miles in. And then, of course, episode 25, people are like all over. I had to add Susan Oliver. And so for this episode, I'm going to add Janice Rule to the Hall of Fame. But the story was awful. The story was slow. You have the little girl there. You have the hot chocolate. And, not much is going on. They're talking. And then the guy knocks on the door. And I agree. Women should not let strangers into their apartment. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. I guess in those days it's a little calmer, but today I tell my wife, if a salesman comes to the door, be very careful. Do not let him in, please. You know, I've seen too many Lifetime movies. I've seen too many horror movies. But Helen Foley lets this guy in, and they talk and talk, and then eventually she realizes who he is. And the scene with the guy falling down the stairs, I watched it a couple times. That was a good stunt. He must have had some pads on because he went down those stairs and boom, that must have hurt. So that was about maybe the highlight of the episode.
It could have been a stuffed dummy.
Yeah, but that was the highlight of the episode for me, was the guy falling down the stairs. So you could see that the story was boring, and then, the Twilight Zone ending, Rod, usually your endings have a point to the ending. This one did not. It's just kind of like the guy's dead, the doctor comes over, the police comes over, kind of fade, and then you have the little song, and then you have another girl, and then the story ends.
And didn't you think it was a little crazy that they just, like, blew it off, that he just fell down the steps, but they didn't even investigate into the death?
Yeah, I guess the Helen Foley character was having an imagination of the girl. You're kind of led to believe that, you know, the girl is real, or is she not real, whatever. And I hate when that happens. You know, the audience has to either, is she real or not, or whatever.
But how did you know that she wasn't trying to kill him instead of him trying to kill her? The police never even checked into it. I mean, I don't get it. Yeah.
The alternate ending I would have had was have the girl kill the guy. That would have been more fun. Not Janice Rule push him, but have the girl do it. Also, one last point I'll make is I hate it when a writer has a story earlier in the season and then maybe comes back and does another angle with this story. Do you remember earlier in the season an episode called Walking Distance?
Mm-hmm.
Episode 5, and we had the guy sees himself as a young boy.
As a child, yeah.
So now we have Helen Foley supposedly imagining herself as a little girl, but she doesn't remember. So there's a little kind of copying, and I don't like that. You got to give me fresh stories, new angles, and then you kind of have an ending where the audience feels satisfied. I wasn't satisfied.
Okay.
So I'm going to pass it along to Kelly.
What's your rating, Ken?
Okay.
My rating, I said at the beginning, my rating was zero lousy, and I agreed with Lynn. So, Kelly, go ahead.
Okay, well, I don't think this episode is as bad as everybody says it is. There are some flaws to it, and I certainly do agree with Lynn that it's odd that this woman didn't recognize herself as a child, because you would think that she would have at least one or two photographs of herself as a little kid. But I guess you kind of have to suspend your disbelief here a little bit, because she says that she doesn't remember a lot of her childhood, so I suppose it's possible she doesn't remember what she looked like, although I believe I said in my review this little girl didn't really look all that much like Janice Rule. Janice Rule is a brunette. You would think they would have wanted to get a child actress in there who had dark hair like Janice Rule, at least to make it a little more.
I agree with that.
At least to make it look a little more believable. And granted, there are some kids out there who start out in the world with blonde hair, and as they get older, the hair turns darker. But in this case, it would have been nice to have seen a kid that resembled Janice Rule just a little bit better. But I thought initially it was kind of an interesting concept for an episode, that she has forgotten about this murder. It does seem a little bizarre that the guy has been following her around all these years, waiting for her to remember. It's like, you know, why wait for her to remember? Why just not, you know, kill her beforehand, before she remembers? It seemed that aspect, I mean, he's kind of a dumb killer from that viewpoint, but, you know, they always say the smart criminals usually don't get caught. I gave it a 3, you know, it was just kind of between average and good. I mean, it probably was more deserving of a 2 in my book, but otherwise, it was just kind of a ho-hum episode. So, Robert, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. It pretty much was a very predictable story. And in a way, it's kind of interesting that I bet you a lot of psychiatrists had fun with this episode and probably showed it to their students or to their class and say, well, here is a case of, you know, such and such. So I kind of liked the little girl, Marky, but I understood the difference between the image of a child and actually having the thought of an adult, because basically the little girl, even though she was acting kind of snobbish nudity that actually is her grown-up self, mind-wise, in a child's body. And so I can understand why she was like that. I thought it's kind of interesting to especially invite little girl that you don't even know, even if she didn't recognize herself in. But I guess during that era, you know, you see, you know, little kids playing in the apartments and stuff, and I guess back then it was okay just to invite a, you know, a stranger into, you know, someone's apartment and then invite her in for, you know, some hot chocolate. But the whole thing is that she was giving Helen the clues of who she was the, you know, entire time. I mean, she kept giving her hints of different things that happened in her life as a little girl. And you would think it would ring some bells, especially
She wasn't picking up on any of it.
Right. And the thing is, especially when she described the burn on her arm. Now, how would someone her age that would live around in that apartment that have no history of the teacher there would know that kind of information unless the kid went to the school, but then she didn't recognize her. It never said, you know, where she teach or what grade she teach, that basically she was just a teacher that was coming home. And, I mean, you know, it had to finally come down to her conscience. And that's basically what the little girl represented, was her conscience finally breaking through and saying, you know, I'm you. And you kind of expected to hear the girl and, you know, say, come on, stupid, it's me. It's you. Can't you figure that out? But, you know, of course, during that time they had to watch what they did. I mean, she left enough breadcrumbs for to, you know, figure out what was going on. And then you got the man. Here's a stranger knocking the door. Oh, hello. Yeah, come on in. Even though I don't know who you are, you could be some killer or strangler or something. You know, I'm just going to let you in and talk to me. And then just pounding her to get her to remember. I thought the whole purpose with him was, you know, he was checking on her to make sure she wouldn't remember anything. I think eventually she would have. But I think the guy kind of helped it along to where, you know, just finally got to the point to where, you know, he eventually would. And how convenient of him to fall down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, what a way to end that. I mean, and then a happy ending. We had to have Rod's happy ending at the end with the other little girl sitting on the stair with her little dolly. Oh, how cute a smile you both have. So, it did kind of remind me of a couple of movies. There was one called Drop Dead Fred, which has the actress from Gremlins and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I can't remember her name offhand.
Phoebe Cates,
thank you.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, that's right.
Where she was a little girl and she had an imaginary friend that would cause her to get into trouble, and then she boxed him away and, you know, lost her childhood until later on she, you know, Fred, her imaginary friend, helps her find her childhood again. And also kind of remind me of Fight Club a little bit with Edward Norton, Brad Pitt. And Edward Norton conveniently had an alter ego that he thought was a real person but was in reality himself in the form of Brad Pitt. So I was kind of thinking about those. But actually, I didn't think of this as lousy. Rewatch value would be a once in a while thing for me, and I give it a 2.5 out of 5.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'll go ahead and pass it on to Bobby. Bobby?
All right. Thank you, Robert. Well, I hate to sound like a broken record because I know I've said this before, and I'll say it again in the future, but I think you have to be very careful when you have a 30-minute program to not do stories that obviously need a lot more time than that. And though Serling was a brilliant writer, without a doubt, sometimes, especially in The Twilight Zone, I think his reach went beyond his grasp, because this is a story that needs to be fleshed out further. I mean, I think it's an interesting concept, and it has kind of a creepy feel to it, but it doesn't go anywhere. because there's no time to tell anybody the backstory, which is the main part of the story. Instead of starting it where it starts, we should have started out as a flashback, seeing her as a child and seeing the murder being committed, and then flash forward to her later in life to have an understanding of why she suppressed all this.
No.
No what? No.
No, no, no. When I get to it, I'll explain. I'm sorry.
Okay. At any rate, I think it would have been a better story that way. To me, this is like reading a book, a 300-page book, and racing through it in order to get to the meat of the story. You need to, The Twilight Zone, very regrettably, in my opinion, eventually goes to an hour-long series, which I think was a terrible mistake. But if you're going to do that hour-long season, which I generally do not like, then at the very least, go ahead and put this kind of story in. Instead, we don't really get anything, any understanding. We don't get any real understanding of what's going on here. And that's the problem for me. I just think it would have been better. I agree with Ken that the man falling down was probably the best part of the entire episode. And I don't know how he did it either, because I tell you, back in the 70s, I fell down steps at home about half the number that he fell down. And when I landed at the bottom, I broke my ankle. I landed on top of my foot. So I don't even know how a stuntman manages to do that without breaking his neck. So that was pretty impressive. And Janice Rule is good in the story, but to tell you the truth, she was better in The Fugitive, for anybody who's seen The Fugitive. episode called Landscape with Running Figures, in which she portrays a blind woman very effectively. That's my favorite episode.
No, actually, Bob, that wasn't Janice Rule who played. That was Barbara Rush playing Mrs. Gerard.
You're right.
She was in the episode Walls of the Night where she played Kimball's girlfriend. Who was on a work release program.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah. All right, well, cancel what I said. I didn't mean any of that. At any rate, I thought she did a good job in the story, but the story just doesn't really go anywhere. I agree with Lynn with everything she said. It's inconceivable that this woman doesn't recognize herself as a child. Is the child supposed to look exactly like she did? Is that the case here?
Well, he showed her a picture of herself, and you know, how could she not remember what she... I mean, I'm 51 years old. I know what I looked like as a kid. If I had myself sitting in front of me as a 10-year-old, I think I know who the hell I was. Yeah.
And the other problem I have here is this guy realizes that she knows he did it. So why not just go in and kill her? If he's a killer anyway, why not just take her out? I mean,
yeah,
what
but,
is all...
But she,
is,
left, but she left him alone for years. She never even remembered. She didn't even bother this guy. You know, she
Then why bother her now?
Exactly. That was my point. Why did he come back and jar her memory? He jarred her memory. There was no reason to do that because she wasn't even bothering him. And all of a sudden he decides, well, maybe I better jar her memory.
If you know you've gotten away with it and the woman doesn't remember, then shut up and leave town.
Leave it alone. Exactly.
Well, get as far
exactly.
away from her as you possibly can. I mean, there's two things. You either get as far away from her as you possibly can, or you go in and take her out and just get it over with, one or
Thank
the other.
Thank you. Yeah.
But you can't have it both ways. So my problem with it is that I just think it's too short an amount of time to tell that kind of story. All of a sudden, I'm in the middle of this story. I don't know who this woman is. I don't really know what happened. And after you take out commercials in a half-hour story, I guess you got about 25 minutes or less to tell the story. And that's not a hell of a lot of time, so
I
wouldn't say this much about it. I thought it had kind of a creepy feel to it. It's kind of a little creepy to imagine that happening to somebody, and that's in keeping with the way the Twilight Zone is supposed to be. But to tell you the truth, maybe it's just me, because I need a little more than that to get involved. I need to feel for the character. And as it was, I didn't really care. I didn't really care whether he killed her or not or whatever. My final complaint is, so he falls down the steps, and the police come, and she doesn't have to explain why he's at the bottom of the steps. Or, I mean, since when do the police accept that so easily? If I'm the cops, how do I know she didn't push him down the steps? How do I know she didn't commit a murder? I mean, so you walk
exactly.
in the door, and she says, well, he came here to kill me or whatever. and we strung it on the top of the steps, and he found out, oh, that's fine. But since when did the police just take that without taking you in and talking to you and finding out if you're telling the truth or not? So a lot of it is too rushed for me, and now I can be told exactly why I'm wrong. Okay, go do it.
Okay, well, normally I turn this over to Dave, but I'm going to turn it over to Rick. I hope you don't mind, Dave, but I'm going to turn this over to Rick right now because Rick seems to have something to say, and I would like to hear it. So go ahead, Rick.
All right. Okay. First of all, if I remember the episode, her mother was killed, and the guy burned the house down. And that's why, and she was caught in the fire, and that's why she had her arm burned.
I thought she burnt her arm on a radiator.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
All right, I'm mistaken then. I stand corrected.
Yeah, I don't think he burned the house down. No, I don't think he burned all
right,
the house down.
All right, but anyway, okay. This did happen, though. Traumatic amnesia. Well, seeing the mother die in front of her.
That's true.
What was I going to say? I'm sorry, I got a dog barking at me too upstairs. So,
I like dogs.
I just lost. I just lost my train of thought.
Well, why am I wrong about wanting to start it with the flashback to the day of the murder?
Because she was being haunted by her past. Okay, and if you showed a flashback, that would have ruined the whole mood of the episode. You wouldn't know that the girl is actually a ghost of her from the past, but haunting her again, and warning her about this guy who's following her.
All right, I can see that. Okay, I can
okay,
see that.
Okay, and also, it's not that unusual for murderers to follow their victims for a year, 2 years, 20 years. You ever hear of the mafia?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and he was waiting, you know, he didn't know if she would ever remember, or even if she would, then he'd have to kill her. Okay, and then he said as much talking
but
to her.
Why wait so long? She could have remembered at any moment during all those years.
True. But
and why,
we don't...
Why appear now and I think as Lynn said, jog her memory all of a sudden? I mean, I would have beat a hasty retreat and gone to the other side of the country, knowing that there was a woman around who really knew the truth. I certainly wouldn't be watching her or following her around. I would get out of there fast. It's just illogical for a man who has the capability of committing murder to simply hang around and do nothing. I just don't buy it. It doesn't make sense.
I think it would have been better if
he's got nothing to lose.
Yeah, but better if it was like maybe she got up and banged her head or something instead of a traumatic amnesia. Maybe a concussion amnesia would have worked. You know.
That would never work because the traumatic amnesia is only temporary. Mm. Traumatic amnesia can last 40, 50, 60, 70 years. Ask any psychologist. The psychiatrist.
Yeah, but Bob, I wouldn't have stalked Helen Foley if I was that guy. I would look at her, and she's so gorgeous, I would ask her out on a date.
That's kind of what you would think that way.
But anyway, I'd give it a 4.
Really? Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I could see that. So, Lynn, is Dave here?
Yeah, Dave's here. Hey, Dave!
Wake up, Dave.
Wake up, Dave. My dear friend, wake up. All right, what do you have to say? I'm sorry to put you last, but we have to hear what Rick said because, you know, he had some very serious comments. Now, go for it. David.
Yeah,
David, I think
can you hear me?
There you are.
Hi.
Okay.
All right, darling. What do you have to say?
Sorry, I'm on my backup PC as I'm doing some editing on the other one at the moment.
No editing during the show.
it's for a podcast tomorrow. My one-word review that I put down, and Bobby mentioned it, is creepy. I think that's what they were going for with this episode, creepy. A couple of things that I'd sort of throw into the mix with what people have said. I would have not said what Rick said. I would have said it was selective amnesia that she had, and that's why she couldn't remember what she looked like as a child. You know, there were only certain parts of her memory that were blocked. So that's one thing. Secondly, one of the things about the person who had killed her mother, I would imagine that he just couldn't stand the uncertainty of being uncovered at any one point. So, you know, he had got to that point where he just couldn't stand it any longer. And if you've ever had like a little cut or wound on your finger, the first thing the doctor would say is, you know, don't touch it and get germs all over it. Leave it alone, it'll heal. And what do? You go and pick at it. You pick at it. And I think basically that what was he was doing, he was prodding and poking. Now, I do have an alternative theory, which is probably a little bit way out of it on that one. But one of the reasons why some of the people have said, well, why didn't he just kill her first if he was worried that she might discover his secret? He was the first person, it says in the description, to have discovered the mother's body. What happens if he might well have been her mother's lover, may indeed have been her father. And he would not want to remember,
kill her. That's a very good analogy. That's a good concept. I didn't think it. That's a good concept, David.
I mean, why would then... maybe he was trying to broach and get a forgiveness. Maybe his own subconscious was driving him to give those hints. He couldn't help himself. But I agree again with Bobby that one of the issues I always have with Twilight Zone is you can only tell almost what you might call vignettes of stories. You can't really tell a deeply backstory to any of these, especially with the time taken away for adverts. If it had run for 30 minutes, I'm sure it would work better. But as you say, I mean, the running time might have even been less than 25 minutes. But those are my two or three little inputs. It's one of the few stories I haven't been able to watch just prior to this episode recording. I usually have. So I am working on, I think it was about 6 or 8 years when it was on one of the UK minor channels that they were airing Twilight Zone that I saw this. But those are my thoughts. I think they were going for creepy. I thought the girl worked rather well. I mean, because the whole point was she was supposed to sit uneasily with you. You're supposed to thinking, you know, it was supposed to be off-centred and off-key. And if there was any weakness to the whole point, it was the fact that, as you say, she wasn't suspected of murdering herself. The fact that this chap had, you know, died in what we would all think were suspicious circumstances at the bottom of her stairs. So, a rating, I'd say...
But didn't you think, Dave, that kid was really annoying? I couldn't stand her.
Because the whole point was that... if we assume, and I think, I think it was Robert. I mean, this wasn't a child from her school. This was a projection of her own earlier self.
What's
so her? The external appearance was how she looked, even though on a conscious mind level she couldn't remember what she looked like. But the child was talking with the same... method of talking that she did as an adult.
That's
so
what I was saying,
that
Dave. That
disposition.
Why,
go on.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just saying. Yeah, that's why she, even though she, like you said, she projected, she looked like a child. She still talked in an adult voice. So
yeah,
I understood
because
that.
Because in effect, you've got to assume that the woman was providing both sides of the conversation.
Right.
We're seeing the child.
Yeah, yeah,
but
I see that.
If it's her subconscious providing, she's talking in her adult manner. She's a teacher as well, so she would tend to talk in, you know, proper English, for want of a better word, rather than like childlike speech. But I think it worked on a certain level. It certainly had the creepy factor. So I would say maybe 2.5 out of 5, creeping towards a 3.
That's why
but
I said psychiatrist had fun with this
annoying,
one.
The kid was just annoying, that's all.
Yeah.
The kid annoyed the heck out of me. I mean, geez.
Yeah. It reminded me a little bit about the boxer one that we did a few weeks ago. You know, the boy who's talking
big
to the
wish,
boxer.
Yeah,
but he wasn't arrogant. I mean, he wasn't really precocious or arrogant. I mean, he was just nice, and he was trying to help out his friend and make a wish for his friend. But this kid in this story was just,
also, of course, it may well have been one of the cheaper episodes that they had to fit in within the series.
Yeah, you're probably right, Dave. You're probably right.
What did you think of, if you ever saw it, the X-Files with the two twin girls that turned out to be a clone of somebody?
Oh, yeah,
well,
was that
Kelly
Eve?
And Ken can answer this, yeah.
Go on, because I don't know that.
Reason why I ask is the two girls who were acting not like 8 or 9 or 10 year olds or however old they were. They were acting like adults, and to me, that's at least in that episode, it was creepy.
Yeah, the girls was a clone of this one gal. I guess she had herself cloned, and there was like a lot of them. I think wasn't it season one?
Yes, it was season one.
Yeah, did it creep into season two? Or did it just stay season one?
No, it was just season one. It was just one episode.
Oh, okay.
Ken, do you remember that episode?
Kelly's seen them all.
What was the name of that episode? Oh, damn it!
I think the gal was Eve, the one that was doing
yes,
the clones.
Yes, it was Eve.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the episode's name, Eve.
Eve 6 or something like that, was she?
No, it was just Eve.
Oh, just Kelly's Eve,
seen
okay.
them all. Take her word on it. She knows.
I've watched probably 3 episodes of the X-Files. And
I watched all 9 seasons.
Yeah, I never watched it. I watched like 3 episodes. I know that it was a very popular show. It went 9 seasons, obviously it was. But it was one of those shows that I never got into. But I know that Kelly and Ken watched every episode.
Oh.
So I can, you know, Ken, what do you have to say about that?
I love the X-Files. It's a very well-written show. Very, very good.
Ken, Lynn, will you turn your television off, please?
Lynn, are you going to let, before we go, are you going to let Robert play this thing you have to play?
He already did. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Not yet.
I'm sorry, Robert.
It's okay.
I forgot about the opening clip.
I know,
yeah,
creepy.
No, the four-minute thing. Yeah, go ahead,
yeah.
Robert.
Okay, first let me just say I want to thank Kurt for putting it together for me after I sent all the clips in for him, and to thank Summer, Michael, Brian, Tim, and Sam for Slice of Sci-Fi. This is episode number 264. And you can go and hear the whole show at sliceofscifi.com, or you can download it from iTunes. But this is about 4 minutes, 7 seconds. So here we go.
Okay, go for it.
Put on your thinking caps, kids, and play along with the gang. Hey, it's trivia time.
Submitted for your approval.
This is a series for the storyteller. All I can tell you is that we think the Twilight Zone is pretty unique. We think it'll be much talked about. We think it'll also be enjoyed.
And 50 years after The Twilight Zone first aired, I think that's still true.
Mm-hmm.
This week, Robert Wentz has given us some clips from the original Twilight Zone.
Ooh,
now,
okay.
I doubt that Robert wants you to identify the title of each and every episode. That would be pretty difficult. But if you can remember the basics of the episode, that's good enough. Here comes the first clip now.
Seconds, minutes, hours. They crawl by on hands and knees for Mr. Henry Bemis, who looks for a spark in the ashes of a dead world. A telephone connected to nothingness.
Broken glass.
They lie at his feet as battered monuments to what was but is no more.
Helen!
Yep.
Helen!
Yep.
Where are you?
Mr. Henry Bemis on an 8-hour tour.
Time enough. That's it. Wow, we rock on Twilight Zone. Holy cow.
Man, that man could paint pictures
with words. Yes, he could.
Of course, that was Rod Serling doing the narration, and the guy calling for Helen was Burgess Meredith.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In Time Enough at Last.
Yes,
from the first season of Twilight Zone. Okay, get ready. Here comes your next clip.
We have a lovely village and wonderful people. I think you're going to like it where I'm going to take you.
This is the one with the pig face people.
Your own kind.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
And she gets
like
things now.
Normal human looks.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried the operation as well.
Meredith Baxter Birdie?
Have to look like
No.
Similar look, but,
but the actress at the end of that clip was Donna Douglas.
That's
Ellie
it.
May on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah. Yep.
And she plays a woman who is considered to be hideously deformed on a planet where all the normal people have pig faces.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's
in
right.
Eye of the Beholder from the second season of The Twilight Zone.
Wow.
Here comes your next clip.
You monster, you. You dirty little monster. You murderer. You think about me. Go ahead, Anthony.
I'm sending you to the cornfield.
You think bad thoughts about me.
You're a
very
bad
man.
Oh.
And I'm banishing you to the cornfields.
I'm banishing you to the cornfields. Yeah,
the one they redid for the movie.
Bill Mumy as Anthony reminds me of myself as a child. It's a good life.
Oh, it's a good life.
From the third season of The Twilight Zone in 1961. Get ready. Here comes your final clip of the day.
My name is Eric Strainer, and I'm going to get rid of you.
You wouldn't dare.
Talking Ben. Something Susie, and I hate you. And I'm going to kill you.
That was Telly Savalas as Eric Strader and June Foray Talking Tina.
Talking Tina.
In Living Doll. From the fifth season of The Twilight Zone in 1963. Now, Telly Savalas went on to play Kojak, and June Foray was the voice of Rocky the
Squirrel.
Flying Squirrel, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Cindy Lou Who in the original Grinch Who Stole Christmas, and Jokey Smurf.
Really?
And many other characters.
That I had no idea.
June's still with us. She's 93.
Wow.
Well, that's all for this Twilight Zone trivia. If you have some trivia clips you'd like to submit, please send them to sliceoftrivia@gmail.com.
I know my
So that was it. I thought it was a little thing to send
so
in there.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Thanks.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to play it.
Robert,
I only got the one wrong. I got the Eye of the Beholder
Robert,
wrong.
Can you hear me at the moment? Can you hear me at the moment?
Yeah, Bobby.
Is it possible for you to put a link to that on our message board that people could actually go to?
I'll just put the sliceofsci-fi.com. They can go to that. And they can also download it through iTunes as well.
All right. Explain what it is, though, when you put it there.
I will.
All right. What is our next show? What is our next episode?
Willoughby.
Okay. All right.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I can't wait for that one. I can't wait for that. Now I'm going to see some serious reviewing here. I mean, Willoughby. Oh, my God. We can't talk about it now. But, my God. I'm ready for that.
All right. I think we've said what we can say about this thing. Why don't
Wait. Ken, did you want to say something?
I need to ask Kelly and Lynn a final question.
Sure.
Have you ever let a strange man into your either apartment or house while alone? Has that ever happened?
Never.
No.
Kelly?
Never.
No.
No. Never, ever, ever.
That's
never,
the lesson
ever,
for women watching. Never let a man into your home if you're alone.
You show me your damned ID. Once I see your ID, I'll know. But still, you can't always judge that because people have fake IDs. So
you can get a fake ID in a box of Cracker Jacks, though.
Exactly. and you tell me who you are and why you're here to see me. Because if I didn't invite you over to my house, you better get the hell off my doorstep.
Hey, if you get the Clint Eastwood box set, the Clint Eastwood box set comes with a copy of Dirty Harry's badge.
Oh, good. I wonder how many people are going to get murdered over that now. Okay, that was good.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, does everybody know that Dennis Hopper died today?
Yeah, 74. That was sad.
I've only heard it a lot of times, yes.
Yeah, very sad. Easy rider, man.
Yeah, well, given the fact that he was a cocaine addict and an alcoholic, it's a miracle he got there.
Yeah, well, he said he didn't think he would live to be 70, but he lived to be 74. He said it himself.
Right.
I don't know if I'll live to be 70.
40. Was it the day before the young lad off different strokes died?
Yeah, Gary Coleman.
Gary Coleman. I couldn't stand that guy.
Oh, yeah. And Art Linkletter. What about Art?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he died. Did he
yeah,
die?
He passed away.
I thought he died
ago.
Years ago.
Wait, we really are far afield here. What is this, Entertainment Tonight or what?
Wait a second. I thought Art Linkletter died years ago. Are you telling me Art Linkletter just died? How old was he?
Yeah.
90?
No, he was over 90. He had to be over 90. How old was he, Robert?
I think, wasn't he, what, 94, 97, Ken? He
Holy
never made Bob Hope no. age.
He was 97.
Was he 97, Kelly? Oh, my God. I thought
Jose
he died years ago.
You remember Jose Lima? He died, too.
Who's that?
Well, my pet frog died.
Some Spanish dancer.
All right. Well. Be sure to tune in again 2 weeks for another edition of Beth Entertainment.
Yeah. All right. Entertainment Tonight. That's right. All right. Well, Rick, thank you so much for being here, and Dave, as always, a pleasure, and all my co-hosts, Robert, Ken, Kelly, Bobby, of course, and. It's been great being here with you guys tonight, and we will be back in 2 weeks with A Stop at Willoughby. Good night, everybody.